श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्री मन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री देव जी गोपाल की जय, श्री गौर राधा महाधव की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, श्री ब्रह्म स्तुति की जय, श्री एकादशी की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण हरि हरि वो। Good morning to all. Pranam. Good morning to everyone present as well online. And today we are continuing with our series of lectures on Sri Brahma Stuti that somehow were interrupted some 3 weeks ago because of some other journeys and other topics, or Japa retreat and other lectures we have in between. So here in Madhavan during the next, whatever, 7 weeks, 10 days, we will be mostly going through the remaining verses of the Brahma Stuti, as well as a few classes of conclusion of the whole series. So today we are in lecture 38, and we will be studying verse 36 of the Brahma Stuti. But let's make some brief, since I'm continuing the series here, and probably some of you were not present in the series, a brief recap of the last 37 classes, and a brief recap more specifically of last class, so to connect the thread and the conceptual thread of, between verses and verses. So Brahma Stuti means, Stuti refers to a form of prayer, like our Guru spoke recently. There is Stotram, Stuti, Vandana, and different ways to refer to the fact of praying, performed by Brahma. Brahma is like a very... He's a very special person. He's considered the architect of the whole multiverse, if you will. The first created being at the beginning of every creation cycle. He's the very first one who comes. And after him, different jivas take their corresponding bodies. So he's considered the post. He's a post, as our Guru spoke the other day. He's not necessarily an eternal person who is always Brahma. We can be Brahma, Krishna can be Brahma if there is a need of that, or someone else can be Brahma, since this is the case. But it's considered the highest material position that you can possibly attain. Brahma is a very sophisticated, aristocratical intellectual, if you will. He has a lot of thinking capacity. He's depicted as having four heads, and it's spoken that there are other Brahmas in other universes with more heads even, no? With even more thinking capacity, very intelligent scientist, if you will. And it is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam before this section that in the beginning, very beginning of creation, Brahma is born from a lotus, which also represents the blossoming of one's consciousness to the search of who we are and which is our source. So in that lotus, taking that symbolically, Brahma starts to look for his source, and the only thing there is him in the lotus, there's nothing else. And there's a long stem. So he starts to go down from the stem, trying to get to the root of his existence, if you want to put it like that. But the stem is never ending, because his source is unlimited. It's Krishna. So he returns to the lotus, and he starts to close his eyes and tries to concentrate and pray and enter in meditation. And he receives some instructions. And he engages in deeper meditation, and eventually Krishna, the Divine Himself, reveals to him and instructs him about what to do in this world, how to himself engage according to the duties he's expected to perform as the architect of the universe, and so on. And Krishna treats Brahma as a friend, shaking hands and so on, and Brahma expresses some affinity towards relating to him as a friend, at least what he could conceive at that time as what's the meaning to be a friend of God, because Brahma was aware Krishna is God, Krishna is my father as well, Krishna is my guru as well, basically my everything. So he expressed that, and Krishna said that will happen eventually. So Brahma continued in his life engaging in these creational duties, and eventually, a few yugas after, when Krishna came to earth and performed his Braja Lila a few thousands of years ago, he appeared in Vrindavan to execute his human-like pastimes. And there comes a chapter called Brahma Vimohan Lila. Before that comes the Agasura Lila, where Krishna kills this well-known big snake called Agasur, and this creates lots of commotion in the whole cosmos, and the devas come and praise that, and Brahma goes to see what's happening, and he witnesses Krishna being with his friends, because on that day Krishna and his friends were having their first picnic day in their Prakat Lila, in the manifest pastime. So they were really overflowing with excitement and anticipation. So Brahma goes and witnesses that situation, Krishna being situated there, like in the world of the lotus, and all the friends being the petals around him, and but in full informality, like when you are with your friends having a picnic. So that was not the version of Krishna he knew in the beginning of creation, who appeared to him in a more formal way, instructing him like a guru with certain mudras in hand, gyan mudra, with more guru-like appearance. So now he was like eating with left hand and receiving the remnant from his friends. So Brahma thought, maybe this is not the same person. I saw, maybe this is an imposter. We have to do something about that. And he tried to kidnap Krishna's friends and calves who were with them at that moment. So he thought he put them in a cave, but actually they were like illusory manifestations of them. So then starts the Vimoham of Brahma. Brahma Vimoham means bewilderment. Maybe we can have close the, then the, in case I may require the microphone. Right? Mm-hmm. So then the point is that Brahma thinks he kidnapped them, and he returns to his planet, Brahmalok, and returns to Earth after a few moments in his planet, which represents a whole year here on Earth, just to realize that everything continued as usual. Why? Because Krishna had expanded himself as each one of those friends and calves that were actually in another prakash, as we spoke the other day, in another dimension of Vrindavan. There are many dimensions. And he was in one of them. They were in one of them, sorry, all his friends and calves, the actual ones. And they were not feeling any anxiety and nothing. So Brahma returns and sees that everything is okay. He goes back to the cave and thinks those illusory representations are there. So he goes back to Vrindavan and sees the boys and calves are there. So his Vimohan one head starts to spin at this point, if you will. And this cup passed for a whole year without nobody in Vrindavan noticing. And that was also to fulfill, we could say, even primarily the desire of the mothers of Vrindavan, who wanted to have Krishna as their son. And he became their son in the form of their child. And the cows want to have Krishna as their calf. And he made that. He satisfied the desire of the Vatsalya Rasa camp, if you will. And Ambaladeva, as we said, for 1 year he didn't know either, because he was not in the picnic that time. He was celebrating his monthly birthday. And this took his attention, because all the cows are loving their old calves more than the newborn calves. What's going on here? There's something strange. And the mothers are loving their child more than Krishna. This shouldn't be happening. It's not the way in Braj. So anyhow, eventually he understands everything. And Brahma at that moment starts to realize what's going on here. And at that point, from each one of these boys and calves, which were expansions of Krishna, Narayans appear, in plural, many Narayans. And Brahmas worshipping those Narayans, different Brahmas worshipping Narayans, and Brahma witnessing that. Now, so the highest degree of Aishwarya you can possibly imagine described in the Bhagavatam, interestingly, happens in Vrindavan, showing that there is the highest majesty, but totally, as we say, buried. That's the only cemetery in Vrindavan, Aishwarya one. So, so another head of Rama starts to spin. At this point, like, three heads are spinning, basically, already. He has four. No, and he sees such a degree of Aishwarya, and suddenly, all that manifestation wraps up, and only Krishna remains with some morsel of food in his left hand, and he's like looking for his friends and calves, like he was doing at the very beginning when Brahma thought, oh, I'm cheating him. And then the fourth head of Brahma started to spin, and we have Bimohan, which means super bewilderment. Mohan means bewilderment, but Bimohan means really bewildered. And that point is that Brahma falls from his swan, touches the earth. Devas doesn't touch the earth, don't touch the earth usually. He puts his head on the soil of Braj and bathes Krishna's feet with his tears, even Abhishek, with full humility, and starts to pray. And that's what we call Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Brahma, which are a very beautiful section of the Bhagavatam, which somehow summarizes and presents in a very condensed but also systematic way, interestingly, all our Gaudiya Siddhanta, all our main philosophical tenets. So Brahma, there are 40 verses. Today we are in the 36. We are entering almost the last section. But in all these verses, I won't go through each of them. But basically, Brahma is establishing the supremacy of bhakti in connection to jnana and karma, the eternality of Krishna's form, the importance that bhakti has to be devoid of all ulterior motives, separate desires, and all this type of things. There are many important verses in that section, Tattenu Kampa, Chushamikshamano, Gyan Prayasudapasya. We can turn it off. Probably one will have use. And many other verses in which Brahma establishes the difference between personalism, impersonalism, and Gyan, Karma, Bhakti, the position of Bhagavan, other forms of the Absolute, the supremacy of Bhagavan's form, the eternality of Krishna Lila, which seems human-like. And the last section we were studying in Switzerland like a month ago is Brahma's reaching the highest one. Remember, he wants to become a Sakha. He asked Krishna, I want to be your friend. Krishna said, okay. And he gave a trailer of that in the Brahma Vimohan Lila. Brahma didn't pass the test fully at that moment. He was not able to accommodate so much friendship, if you will, so much intimacy. But nonetheless, he's still attracted by that. He was bewildered by that, but at the same time he starts to rediscovered the object of his affection. Oh, now I'm starting to understand who Krishna is actually by understanding who are his devotees, which is the love that makes him who he is. So he starts to put all the things together in his own heart and mind while praying. Now, while presenting each of these prayers, Brahma's understanding of Krishna becomes upgraded and more established and settled, both in terms of Siddhanta and on the basis of that, Bhava. So in the last verses that we saw before today's one, Brahma starts to more emotionally direct his attention to the inhabitants of Vrindavan, to the Brajabab, to glorify the fortune of the Brajabas among all other types of devotees. Like from verse 30 till verse 35 or 4, there comes a section of aho verses, no? In the sense that Brahma, in almost every verse, will use this word aho, aho, which is an expression of astonishment and bewilderment, no? Reaching a high point, the famous Ahobhagyam Ahobhagyam Nanda Gopa Brajokasham Yan Mitram Paramanandam Purna Brahma Sanatanam, when Brahma is praising the cowherd boys, the good fortune, and actually how he wants that good fortune himself, and so on. So that's where we are. And that's the affinity that Brahma has. It's again, as the other day, yesterday, someone asked my Guru Maharaj regarding, well, what type of Sakya Brahma wants? That's not something that has been really specified that we know in Shastra in detail. As we were mentioning yesterday, if you go to Brahma Samhita, you will find that Brahma is praising the gopis. So that shows that he's aware of the gopis. And one could make on one level, again, the case that may be a possibility he knows about the Gopriyanarma Sakya, but again, it doesn't necessarily is an indication that Brahma is a Priyanarma Sakya, because we can be a sadhaka in the very beginning of our practice and know about Krishna and the gopis. Doesn't mean that you are Priyanarma Sakya or a manjari or anything. So in the stage of sadhana, you can know that, and then in the stage of siddhi or perfection, you may continue knowing that as a Priyanarma Sakya, or you may not know about that in another particular disposition. So well, we are planning to do some more detailed research about the life of Haridas Thakur, who is Brahma and Gaur Lila, to see if we find some extra hints in which direction that Sakya may be ultimately expressed. So that's a brief summary, 15 minutes, but I did my best. So now let's do a brief summary of the last verse, to connect that verse to today's verse, and then we go to today's verse. Today I may extend a few minutes extra on the normal days because of this introduction. So in the previous verse, verse 35, I'll read the verse and I'll share a few words. We quoted this verse the other day in Sri Krishna Janmashtami. So this verse 35, remember this is Brahma Vimohan Lila. So Brahma was bewilderment in the beginning for some reasons, but then he starts to experience another type of bewilderment when he realizes who actually Krishna is, and which is the love of the Brajavas, is another Vimohan altogether. And we will see how that creates another Vimohan for Krishna as well. So in this verse, verse 35, I'll go straight to the English. Brahma is saying, my mind becomes bewildered just trying to think of what reward other than you could be found anywhere. The first bewilderment. You are the embodiment of all benedictions which you bestow upon these residents of the cowherd community of Vrindavan. You have already arranged to give yourself to Puttana and her family members in exchange for her disguising herself as a devotee. So what is left for you to give these devotees of Braj, whose homes, wealth, friends, dear relations, bodies, children, and very lives and hearts are all dedicated only to you? So that's an interesting verse. So Brahma is here, reaching here his ultimate, Sanatana Goswami will say, he here is presenting his ultimate four-headed Siddhantic conclusion. It's a very heady and hearty Siddhantic conclusion, which is, his conclusion is, oh, Krishna, you are actually an eternal debtor to the Vrajavasis. You cannot repay back. And love is its own reward. That will be played out eventually in the Bhagavatam. So with this, Brahma is upgrading his own Bimohan, if you will. I will invoke some Bimohan for Krishna, some bewilderment for him. How to repay, how to reply to this question. And he makes this extreme contrast in this verse by quoting Puttana, who want to kill the baby Krishna, just a newborn baby, want to kill him by disguising herself as a Brajavasi. She was like a plastic Brajavasi or something. She wanted to kill Krishna, and Krishna replied giving himself to her by giving Vatsalya Prem, through which he becomes hers. And you gave yourself to her, so what you will give to these Brajavasis who do not want to kill you but are willing to kill themselves for your sake? So how? They are the original Brajavasis. Puttana was a fake Brajavasi, and you gave yourself to the fake Brajavasi. What will you give to the original ones? So if you gave yourself to Puttana and to his relatives by extension, Agasur, Bakasur, they have some relation to Puttana, they were blessed by that. How you will reciprocate with the Brajavasis? If you already gave yourself to Puttana, you cannot give that same thing to someone else after giving something. That logic was given by Jiva Goswami. If you give something to someone, you can give again that thing to someone. You gave to Puttana after you were born, a few days of being born. So that will be a shadow of gratitude if now you give yourself to the Vrajavasis after being given to someone else. That's not compute. That's not the only thing you can give. Okay, you have to give yourself, but what else? And Brahma concludes, acknowledging your debt is basically the only way I can think you can repay back. I mean, you cannot repay back. So the best thing you can do at this point is acknowledge you have a debt, and an eternal one. That's the best thing you can do as an attempt to do something about it. Not to repay back. The debt keeps increasing at every moment. And of course, Krishna receives such a question from Brahma. He doesn't reply, remains thoughtful for a few verses and chapters. And after 18 chapters in the Bhagavatam, here we are in chapter 14, here in chapter 32, he will say like, Napariham niravadhya samjayam sasadhu krittam vibhudhaya sapivasamava jandurjaragiha shrinkala sambrishyatat bhapratiyatu sadhu. In the height of the Rasa Lila, he will say, the gopis and Radha in particular, I cannot repay your debt, but even in the lifetime of Brahma, he quotes Brahma. Somehow he reminded, oh, Brahma made me that question. Even if I try, I cannot let your own love be its own reward. You have given to me in such a way that let your own saintliness become that. But of course, according to Sanatana Goswami, and he explains the verse in final line, also Krishna here is announcing his descent as Mahaprabhu, saying, you are such sadhus, that I cannot repay back, but I'll try to repay back by becoming a sadhu myself. I better take that out because it will be a whole event. So I will try to become a sadhu myself. I will come as Mahaprabhu's Gaurasundara. I will try to repay back. I cannot repay back, but I cannot just sit with my arms crossed doing nothing. So I'll try to chant the glories of your love. I'll try to make your love known around the world, to make devotees for you, O Radha, and so on. So in this way, this question of Brahma is announcing or promote, if you will, pushing for Krishna to reply in such a way about his coming as Gaurasundara, which is a Parishishta Lila. Gaur Lila is an appendix-like Lila, which comes to fulfill those desires that come, as we know, in Krishna's and are satisfied as Mahaprabhu. So brief words about last verse. So today we are continuing, finally, with verse 36. And in today's verse, Brahma will continue praising the Brajavasis, but with an apparently disconnected verse. Apparently only, we will see. Because he will be here contrasting the lifestyle of materialistic people with the apparent mundane lifestyle of the Brajavasis. Apparently attached to house, to family. But as we will see, the Brajavasis are attached to those things in Tadiya Seva, seeing them as potential paraphernalia to be engaged in the service of Krishna. So that's, instead of becoming a problem, becomes a solution, facilitator. So here we have the verse. It's here also in our whiteboard. So I'll recite it first once in Sanskrit, and then you can repeat with me. This is in Anushtub Chanda. Chanda means meter, and different verses in the Brahma Stuti are in different meters. This is like one of the most classical ones present in the Gita and so on. So the verse says like this. Tabat ragada yastinas tabat kada griham griham tavan mohangrini gado jabat krishna jatnati janaha. So we can repeat all together. Tabat ragada yastinas tabat kada griham griham tavan mohangrini gado yavat krishna jati janaha. So I'll read the translation and then we go word by word and so on. So Brahma is telling here, O Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. So that's today's verse, basically, in which Brahma is mentioning all the things that are okay, but if they are out of center of reality, if they don't have a ultimate connection with everyone's source, they end up becoming a source of entanglement instead of facilitators for freedom and redemption, if you will. So let's go to the word by word of the verse. I will recite each word in Sanskrit. You can repeat after me. I will recite then in English. You can repeat after me as we do usually. Tabat. For that long. Raga adayaha. Material attachment and so on. Stenaha. Thieves. Tabat. For that long. Karagriham. A prison. Griham. One's home. Tabat. For that long. Moha. The bewilderment of family affection. Angrini gadaha. Foot shackles. Yabat. As long as. Krishna. Na. Do not become. Te. Your. Which means your devotees, basically. Janaha. People. Okay, so now let's try to unpack the content of this verse, what I've been doing. For those who were not able to follow the series, I'm beginning with a commentary that my Guru Maharaj has written on this verse. Our Guru Maharaj, not everyone may be a disciple of him, so just making it easier. In his forthcoming book is coming, it's called Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubad. So he will write the whole commentary on it, will be there on the Brahma Stuti. So he'll share that with me when I ask him blessing permission to give the series. He told me, yes, and I have even written a commentary on that. So I asked, okay, so the implication of that is that I can share that. So, okay, thank you. he generously shared that and some other advice for that connection. So I'll begin with that, and then we will go through some of the main classical commentators and on the Bhagavatam, like Sridhar Swami, mostly Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and a few others in some cases. So I'll begin with our Guru Maharaj's commentary, Bhaktivedanta Bhavanubhat. So he says the following in connection to this verse. Because Braja Bhakti is difficult to understand, Brahma then offers the following comparison and explanation. These Brajavasis are not like this, are not like sannyasis of the Gyan Marg, the path of, mostly in this case, impersonal knowledge, who give everything up and at best come to you empty-handed, looking for peace. These coward people come to you with houses, families, friends, and so on, all of which are extensions of their own identity as your devotees, and as such, all of which are placed at your disposal. Love is a thief, a house is a prison, infatuation is a ball and chain, if they are not extensions of those who consider themselves to be yours. But these coward people go beyond that. Indeed, they think that you also belong to them. And they are correct. So that's Guru Maharaj's explanation in this verse, making it very clear and very charming. So all this verse will happen in the context, again, of Rama trying to clarify these Brajavasis that he has been praising for the last verses are not mundane people, although they seem so in many ways, a prakrita. It seems prakrita mundane, but it's super transcendental. So he will try to make that case and even compare them, as we will see here in other commentaries, with sannyasis of the Gyan Mar, who become extremely detached and renounce everything in this world and are not even attached to coping, like Sukadev Goswami, who was just naked in the world, not even aware of that. But he became attracted to the Brajavasi, to being one. So this is the idea. Now here the Brajavasi, the sannyasis is renounced with, at best they come empty-handed because they renounce everything, so they don't have anything to offer. But they want something from you yet. I want mukti. I want freedom from samsara. I want peace. Shanti, shanti, shanti. I want something. Which is okay. Krishna accepts that approach on some level. But the situation of the Brajavasis here is way beyond that. Again, they're not coming empty-handed. They're bringing everything they have. But not. They don't consider, this is mine, this is for your service, my house, my cows, my wife, my children, my body, my mind, my everything. Offering that and not wanting anything in return. Not concerned even about peace, but just love. Love means I want to serve you, I want to please you, I want to give everything to you, and so on. So there is a clear difference between, again, Gyan Marg and the overtly transcendental situation, because for most of us, transcendental means, oh, that person is dressed in ashes and had dreadlocks and wears a loincloth and lives in a cave. Wow, that's super advanced. Yeah, in comparison to someone extremely attached living in Fifth Avenue, New York, and running after money. But the Brajavasis are way beyond that person in the cave, with all respect, because they're not detaching, but they are attached to the perfect object of attachment. So the idea is, and if you don't have that attachment, just to make it clear, it's not just about having house and family, you can have those things, but if you don't direct them to their center, they become all the things, a thief, a prison, a ball and chain, because of attachment, not because they are bad, but because how you are relating to the things. You are not seeing them as the Brajavasis are seeing them. It's all about the change of angle of vision. And my Guru Maharaj concludes saying this idea, you know, that they even consider you as their property. So there is a very unique gradation here. Now again, my Guru Maharaj presents in the beginning empty-handed jnanis who are still looking for something separately from themselves. Shanti, peace. Then we have those who think, there are people who see that what belongs to them, okay, is potential for apharnalia to be used in seva. Okay, this is mine, but I will offer this to Krishna. But still there is some consciousness of, this is mine. I will offer my money, my house, my body to Krishna. But then we have the Brajavasis ultimate sense of possessiveness, which is not so much this is mine and mine, but you are ours, Krishna, and everything this is for you. So they are using what we think is ours for Krishna's pleasure. They don't think it's theirs, but they use everything. But they conclude that nothing is theirs. That's the consciousness of a Brajavasi. Nothing is mine except for Krishna. While the opposite happens in material vision. Everything is mine except for Krishna. They don't have any sense of relationship with the divine. And as my Guru Maharaj concludes here, no, they say, brothers, you belong to them, Krishna, and they are correct. They think like that, and they are right. It's not that they are just their nonsense. You are theirs. If you belong to someone more than anyone else, it's in that direction. So again, we have this gradation here, like from karma to jnana to bhakti to braja bhakti. No, in karma means, in karma or in fruitive action, exploitative movements, we have this notion, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, my sense of I depends on my sense of mine. Whatever is mine, I build the whole identity on the basis of what I think belongs to me. Now, as we say, this is my country, so I am Argentinian. Now, according to what is mine, my country, there is a sense of I am Argentinian. This is my wife, I am a husband. I develop designations. This is my children, I am a father. So my sense of what I am depends on what I think it belongs to me. So that's basically the karmic part. And many times this sense of what belongs to me ends up objectivizing everything. Everything becomes an object for me. They are objects. I don't treat even them like as persons, but you are something that is mine. It's not very romantic, but that's how sometimes people move in this world. So then you have karma on that level. No? Then jnana means nothing is mine. No? In karma, is everything is mine, or I'm trying everything to make it mine and to build my impoverished sense of self to grow by accumulating and acquire and exploiting and owning or thinking that's going on. Jnana means, no, try to realize nothing belongs to you. Which is, of course, is a thunderbolt to the ego, but it's a great relief once you... Wow. I'm not trying to own things, possess, control. And then comes bhakti. Bhakti means not so much nothing is mine, but I am yours, Krishna. It's not so much what belongs to me or nothing belongs to me, but who I belong to. The question comes from that side. In karma, the question is what belongs to me? How can I catch that? In jnana is how can I understand nothing belongs to me? In bhakti is who I belong to. So in bhakti I'm yours, Krishna. No? Karma, everything is mine. Jnana, nothing is mine. Bhakti, I'm yours. And braja bhakti, you are mine, Krishna. You are mine. Because you are my friend. You are my, in that sense, of course, not in an exploitative sense. You are my lover. You are my child. There is this mamata, which means possessiveness. So it seems we return to point A, no? The first point. This is mine. But this is not this, it's Krishna, and the mine is on top on the basis of pure love. So that's mamata. There's mamata in the material experience, possessiveness, and is the source of all entanglement. But proper directed mamata is the source, the symptom of the greatest love, basically. So we have made, it seems we return to karma, but actually we made full circle. And we have integrated all the complexity, as we always say, no? Enriched Vrindavan, which as I like to put it, shows the second naivete. Now, first naivete is, the naivete of this world, but then you integrate all the complexity in the in-between stage and reach full maturity. And Vrindavan is so simple, this idyllic village is simple. There's so much simplicity, but that doesn't mean that they are simplistic people. They want to avoid integration of complexity. There's no simplisticness. I don't know if that word exists, but there's simplicity. Simplicity means integration of complexity has been accomplished. That shows its simplicity. There's lots of things that have been properly integrated. That's the result of the highest synthesis, integration of complexity. So one thing is to be simple, having integrated lots of complexity. Another thing is to be simplistic, and wanting to avoid the task of going through that complexity. So Brajavasis are the final fruit of that. So the relation of the Brajavasis with sense objects, their houses and so on, is not selfish. No, it's not from a misdirected sense of self, but it's only for the purpose of Krishna's service. They only see their house in those terms, their cows, their wife, their selves, whatever they put their psyche in terms of how this can be pleasurable for Krishna. There is no other element in their DNA. Let's share the examples of the Pandavas to give some contrast. In this same line, in this same mentality, but also another type of devotion. The Pandavas many times are this famous, of course, five brothers, Arjuna being maybe the most well-known, Yudhishthira, Bhima, Nakul, Sahadev. And they seem to be absorbed in material affairs, being royal, being part of the royalty and administrating and dealing in the world. Indeed, in his Priti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam, the first canto, that mentioned that they were very much attached to their kingdom and family. So one may say, oh, but on the other side, we heard that the Pandavas are such great devotees. So how to understand that verse of the Bhagavatam? And Jiva Goswami will say, no, that verse applies to other Pandavas, like Dhritarashtra and others, who can be considered in part of that group, if you will, but not to the Pandavas in themselves. And of course, that's proved by the fact we know that when Vidura instructed Dhritarashtra and the end of his life, what did he say to Dhritarashtra? Try to abandon all this royal comfort, try to culture some, go to the forest, implying you are attached, Dhritarashtra, you are attached to those things. But he didn't instruct in that way to the Pandavas ever, because he knew you are not attached to all the things. You are using all the things for this in the service of Krishna. You are ruling for the sake of Krishna. It's not like you want to do that, you are mad about that. And they were great kings. I mean, that's a situation where you can be the most materialistically attached. And for example, when Yudhishthira Maharaj got the news that Krishna had ended his pastimes, he's left the planet, if you will, what did Yudhishthira Maharaj say? He immediately renounced his kingdom. So that showed, I'm not attached to this. I was doing that for his sake. Now he's gone. He has no more purpose. And immediately detached from that. And he went to the Himalayas with all his brothers, with Draupadi, famous story in the Mahabharata also. So they showed, we are not attached to that actually. They were not lingering around like Dhritarashtra was doing till almost the very last moment. At that moment, all of the rest of 100 children were killed by Bhima, but he still was somehow lingering, grasping at taking the something of that kingdom, what was remaining. Nothing was there, but anyhow. So that's why Vidura was chastising Dhritarashtra, telling, you are allowing death to catch you, by not leaving this situation and taking a distance from all that, still in the jaws of material attachment till the very last moment of your life. That's so unbecoming. But the Pandavas, again, they seem to be attached, but they were not. So if this is the case with the Pandavas, if it's possible to be surrounded by all these material assets, you say, and be totally detached, what to speak of the Brajavasis? I'm trying to create the contrast. Kaimutya Gyan, no? If this is the case with the Pandavas, then what to speak of the Brajavasis? Although they don't have such big kingdoms, but they have such big prayer. They could have those kingdoms. They are not attracted to that. And Krishna told them, let's go to Dwarka. No, thank you. So one should not misunderstand the idea is the position of the Brajavasis. This is the very idea of this verse. Now, Brahma is praising the Brajavasis, and after praising them in this verse, he's trying to make sure the people I've just praised, they are not ordinary people. Please don't misread them. But also, Do not also misunderstand this whole thing by thinking, oh, then I can have my house, my family, my everything, and I'm totally advanced like the Brajavasis by being surrounded by all these household situations. Now you can perform ordinary domestic affairs very enthusiastically like the Brajavasis, and that makes me a Brajavasi. If you don't have their level of bhakti, that won't happen. Yeah. The cable can be more.
You have to
Hello? Yes. Okay. We are using microphone now. It's getting starting to rain, so let's see. So anyhow, some words in connection to my Guru Maharaj comment. Let's continue with the series of commentaries by our ancient, classical, if you will, Purvacharyas. So let's begin with Sridhar Swami. We'll begin chronologically. The first Sridhar Swami, Sanatana Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So I'll read the commentary. They are brief ones. And we'll comment something in between. So, Sridhar Swami says, in relation to the previous verse, Krishna may retort. Remember, in the previous verse, Brahma is praising the Brajavasis, their houses, their families, everything is offered to you. So Krishna may retort, sannyasis too, who have no faults, such as material attachment, think nothing is superior to me, Krishna may say. Why do you say that the giving of myself to the Brajavasis is insufficient for them? So then Brahma answers to that question in this verse. So indirectly he's pointing here at the self-giving of the Brajavasis, which is way bigger than how these sannyasis maybe think, okay, yeah, nothing is superior to Krishna, but the way the Brajavasis are giving themselves to Krishna, there is no comparison from someone that just remains detached and says, yeah, nothing is superior to Krishna. And the idea, according to Sridhar Swami, this verse is saying, as long as someone does not become yours, and yours here means fully yours, as only the Brajavasis are doing, as long as that's not happening, that's why the verse is tabat, 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 as long as, everything remains a thief, a prison, a foot shackle, ball and chain. That what makes the whole difference. So, even if you are a sannyasi, so that counts for me, even if you are a sannyasi, if you are not giving yourself fully, that's not speaking about your adhikar, your inner eligibility, your position internally. It's not being a sannyasi necessarily means you're higher than others. It was funny because today this verse is here, and I was looking today at these memories in Facebook. Sometimes I share some. And one of them I was asking, putting like one public question in Spanish. I said, so what do you think? By being a sannyasi, are you necessarily higher than someone who is not a sannyasi? And now I'm reading this and I'm relating. Oh, yeah, interesting.
God incidents.
Sorry?
God incidents.
Yeah, yeah. God incidents. Not coincidence. So, again, the Brajavasis seem to be not only Grihastha. Look, Brajavasis are not brahmacharis, sannyasis. Sannyasi may be some Durvasa Muni that comes to visit and everyone is afraid. We may be cursed by him. Be careful, let's take care of these sannyasis, these weird monks. But in Vrindavan, everyone is Grihastha. And they even seem to be Grihamedi. No? Grihastha means married people. Grihamedi means attached family people. Because, again, they are so attached to their house, family. But they are attached to that, not in service to them, but they are attached to that in service to Krishna. And generally, we may be attached to our car and our whatever house because we see those things as, oh, this is serving me. So you are actually attached to have those things in your service because you are attached to your false sense of being the center and having stuff in service to you. But you can be attached to everything in service to Krishna. The problem is it's not to be attached to objects, but it's the point is you are attached to objects in the service of whom? Then comes the problem or the solution to the problem. Because if you are attached to your car as a service tool to Krishna and you take care of the car with that mentality, you're not getting attached to the car with you in the center. You're not attached to the car. You're getting attached to Krishna's service through that particular tool. Whenever that tool is not there, you're still attached to Krishna's service. And we spoke about that with Navrasa in our podcast on social media. Someone may say, Maharaj, I'm using social media in Krishna's service. I'm not attached to social media myself. I'm just attached to to serving Krishna through social media. Okay, no problem. But the point is, do a fasting of social media for a week and see if you remain attached to serving Krishna in any other way. Because if you're attached to serve Krishna, that will take so many forms. If the car is no longer there, you're still attached to serve Krishna. So you will be, if you are really attached, you will see forms of serving him in so many other ways. So that's the situation of the Vrajavasis, Tadiya Seva. They are attached to those things that are potential paraphernalia to be offered in Krishna's service. So this is the gist of this verse. No? That's how Sridhar Swami is concluding his commentary. He says, in the case of those who are yours, Brahma is saying, of course, through Sridhar Swami, in the case of those who are yours, the Vrajavasis, however, attachment and other feelings based on you are conducive to liberation. So he makes this contrast. Even if you are a sannyasi, that may be a problem. If you are not attached to everything in the service of Krishna, you can be a sannyasi and be attached to so many things, even in a subtle way. But in the case of the Vrajavasis, their sangha, again, Guru Maharaj will say always, our path is not vairagya, you do not progress by detachment. Our path is you progress by sangha. And sangha, one word for sangha, is attachment. Not necessarily only association. Sadhu sangha is association with sadhu, so sadhu sangha means attachment to sadhu, which is another way of saying association with sadhu. That's a real association. If you really associate with a sadhu, you get attached to their saintliness. So that becomes, opens the door of liberation. So here Siddhar Swami concludes saying, in the case of the Vrajavasis, their attachment is conducive to liberation. Of course, liberation, they are post-liberated. They don't need to obtain liberation. For us, liberation, if not, we can understand liberation as from liberation, as we say the other day. That's our real mukti. I'm free from the desire to obtain mukti. That's mukti, in capital letters. And he concludes saying, this particularity of the Vrajavasis, their attachment to everything in your, for your sake, makes those devotees' spiritual practice superior to that of a renunciant. So the bhajan of the Vrajavasis is way higher than just a renunciant that is detached from everything, but not attached to Krishna and everything in relation to Krishna as the Vrajavasis do. And Mahaprabhu was speaking with Ramananda Roy in their sambad, in their conversation. Mahaprabhu asked him, speak to me about Sadhya Sadhana Tattva, the goal of life and how to attain it. And at one point, Ramananda Roy quotes the conclusion of the Gita, at least how it was understood at that moment by most people. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papavyo mokshay sisyami masicham. Leave everything behind and just surrender to me. And for many people, this verse spoke about renunciation. Sarva dharmam parityaja. Leave everything. Become a renunciant. And Ramananda Roy quoted that verse with that idea in mind. He had his own idea of that verse, but the popular understanding was accept sannyas and renounce everything. Mahaprabhu say, ego bahi, eho bahya, agi kaha. That's superficial. Go deeper. So Mahaprabhu himself, he was a sannyasi at that time, formally. And he said, and Ramananda suggested, accept sannyas, that's the goal of life, that's a higher theme. Mahaprabhu said, no, that's superficial. Continue going deeper till you reach the Vrajavasis. And when Ramananda said, Gyan Prayasudapasyana Mantra, when he described Gyan Sunya Bhakti, which is the foundational mood of the Vrajavasis, they don't know that Krishna is God. Mahaprabhu said, oh, that's good. Continue on that basis. Elaborate that. When he touched on what the Vrajavasis are, then Mahaprabhu said, that's good. But sannyas, that's nothing in comparison. So anyhow, some words regarding Sridhar Swami's commentary. Bhavartha Deepika. From Bhavartha Deepika, let's move on to Brihad Vaishnava Toshini, Srila Sanatana Goswami's commentary. The word Adi, Ragada Adaya Stinas, in Adaya, Adaya is Adi is included, which means etc. or and so on, refers to anger and other vices. No? Raga means attachment, and Adi means etc. No? Anger and long list of anarthas that may be there. Brahma implies with this, But this is an interesting shift that Sanatana Goswami makes. Your devotees even use their anger in bhakti to you. For by rebuking the foolish materialists, their anger culminates in bringing about their deliverance. So here's quote in this section, not so much as attachment and all these are a problem. I mean, are a problem if you are not in the center. But if you are in the center, even those things, not only attachment, we already explained a little bit how attachment can not be a problem but a solution, but even anger or things like this. You say, like, well, how can anger be expressed to deliver others or be beneficial for my bhakti? And here, Sanatana Goswami gives one example. Your sadhus may rebuke someone, materialist people, but rebuke means compassionately. No, not just like, okay, now I have the perfect excuse to dovetail my anger and I will be like grumpy at everyone. It's not like that. But if a very saintly person lovingly rebukes you with full compassion, that person will be blessed. Again, this is not an idea to be abused. But first you have to be, like the famous example Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta was speaking to his disciples one, and he said, everything can be engaged in the service of Krishna. Krishna is such an object of love. He can receive and honor everything, that even anger can be directed to him in a certain way, not in any way, in certain, in relation to him, it will be expressed and that will be purified. All our anartas, karma, krodha, and so on, they can be expressed. And he's made the point of anger, and someone asks, how can I express anger in connection to Krishna? And she said, well, you can express your anger against the enemies of Krishna. So everyone started to think their own version of that. What does it mean? If we go in the street and someone says, I don't believe in Krishna, we can beat them up to death, and that's a way of expressing anger. No, that was not the intention. So Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta saw, no, you are not getting my idea. So he said, yes, you have to express anger against the enemies of Krishna, but first you have to ask yourself, I'm not an enemy of Krishna yet still. So if you realize I'm still going against Krishna's wish, will, that will be being an enemy. Try to understand the words. Then you have to be express anger towards yourself. And what does it mean? Does it mean bring a whip and let's enter masochist group or something? But be disciplined with yourself. Be strict with yourself. In that sense, that's anger. That's not anger. That's not violence, technically. But you're strict with yourself. That was the point he wanted to make. Then Sanatana Goswami explains the name Krishna. Now in this verse, the word Krishna appears. In different verses of the Brahma Stuti, different names of Krishna appear. In every case, the selection of a particular name has some purpose. It's not just that casually Brahma invokes one name or another that better fits the meter of the verse. Madhava, Achyuta, Govinda, as he had done throughout the Brahma Stuti. But in every verse of the Bhagavata, or even in the Gita, all our acharyas have always pointed. In this case, this name of Krishna is used because of the meaning of this name relates to what's said in this verb, in this way. So it's important that we do not take just like lightly, oh yeah, Krishna, oh yeah, I know that name. But why Krishna and not any other name is used here? So Sanatana Goswami says, the sense of the name Krishna here is, oh, you who attracts everyone's heart. That's the general definition of Krishna, the all-attractive. And of course, he does so, but what's the connection with this verse? Well, the fact that Krishna attracts everyone's heart inspires the Vrajavasis to act in such a way, to give themselves in such a way as they can only do. And as it's being explained in this verse. But also, as we said the other day, Krishna, the dhatu of the word Krish, which means to attract, it can be expressed in terms both passive and active. So active means to attract, but passive means implies to be attracted. So Krishna can be the all-attractive, or can mean the all-attracted. So he becomes the all-attractive becomes all-attracted only in Vrindavan, by the special love of the Vrajavasis. So that's, in one sense, why Brahma is saying Krishna here, because he's speaking about the love of the Vrajavasis and Krishna becomes totally attracted. Or, Sanatana Goswami, in his purport, he's usually doing this. He's saying same something, and then or, and he goes to another possibility, or, and so now he goes to another one. So his raga daya can mean attraction for Vaikuntha. So he takes that even a step further. It's not a problem. I mean, yeah, we know it's a problem to be attached to material terms, to things in this world. But he says for the Vrajavasis, he's, remember, promoting Vrajabhava at this point. He's an official promoter of Vrajabhava. So the Raga Daya can refer to attraction for Vaikuntha, the dwellings there, and affection for Lakshmi. All the things will be causes of disturbance and restriction, as long as they do not become people of Vraj, serving you with dedication. So if you are a Raga Nuga Sadaka and you would like to enter Vraj, be careful with getting attracted to Vaikuntha, Lakshmi. I mean, we are not insulting that, but I mean, we want to develop a certain spiritual identity. And any sense of identity, even a material one, is the result of some scars. No? Certain impressions that we have received through lifetimes, they store in the citta and they form a sense of self. That's what who we think we are now, because of the impressions we receive from time immemorial and make us identify again. I am a man, I am a woman, I am this, I am that. But spiritually speaking, the same holds true. Your spiritual identity will be the result of the spiritual samskaras you are receiving. So when you somehow, feel some particular affinity in one direction, you will be very careful that all the samskaras you are receiving to create that identity, if you want to call it like that, or to invoke that particular manifestation, have to go in certain lines. Because if not, you are receiving Vishnu Bhakti Samskara, Ram Bhakti Samskara, Sakya Rasa Samskara, Krishna Bhattu, and it becomes like a mixture that you don't have any defined. No? So, you follow my point? No? So that's why in Shastra that's recommended. At one point, you have to associate in deep intimacy and receive specific samskaras according to the affinity you are culturing. So be careful with Vaikuntha. Basically, that's the idea. No? Again, at this point, Brahma is biased towards Vrindavan, towards Vrajabhava. So he's saying in this verse, if you get attracted to Vaikuntha, Vaikuntha Dham, Lakshmi herself, that will distract you from Vraj. Be careful with that. Mm-hmm. Nimana Shiksha, Raghuna Das Goswami says a similar thing. No? Be careful with, not with Lakshmi herself, but be careful with feeling too much affinity to Lord of Vaikuntha, or Lakshmi herself. Be careful with Vaikuntha. Vaikuntha means no anxiety, but it can act as Sakunta. It can act as a source of anxiety. if you receive those impressions and you want to enter the Vraj, that will create some. You follow. As Gopa Kumar, when he was in Vaikuntha, he wants to embrace Narayan as his friend, and he created anxiety in Vaikuntha. So apply the opposite idea. No? If you are applying yourself for Vraj, and Vaikuntha Bhav comes, it's like interruption of the flow. Mm-hmm. So that's how Sanatana Goswami concludes his commentary. Let's continue with Srila Jiva Goswami. Mm-hmm. He will have some interesting things to say. Again, many of these commentaries start with Krishna retorting something, no? Like in between dialogues, between verse and verse. That's a dynamic that our acharyas always invoke. So Krishna may retort here. If the glory of the Vrajavasis is that they give everything to me, remember, connection to last verse, then you should go home and do the same thing. Krishna is telling to Brahma. What are you doing here? Go to Brahmaloka. Brahma says, okay, but it is hard for me and other Atmarams even to do that. The souls of these Vrajavasis are only for your sake. And so the glory of their Bhav is much greater than ours. So with this intention, Jiva Goswami says, Brahma speaks this verse. Of course, Brahma wants to enter the Vraj, but at the same time he's feeling so much humility by contrasting his present experience and discovering where the Vrajavasis actually are, who they actually are. Remember, he a few minutes ago mistook them for ordinary people and tried to kidnap them. Remember, he's feeling, I committed such an apparat, I interrupted the picnic lila, I want to kidnap Krishna's associates, I thought that the form of Bhagavan was an impostor, I committed Rupa Aparad, Leela Aparad, Parishad Aparad, my gosh. But I said years ago, I want that, I want friendship. And then I offended everything in relation to that. So embarrassed I am. But I want that at the same time. So he's in all this mixture of feelings. I'm attracted to that even more. The more I discover that, the more I realize the degree of my offense. But at the same time, the more I realize how much I want that. So try to enter into Brahma's heart. You know, it's being like churned in this particular way. So in this way, he's saying, if you tell me go home and do the same thing, Brahma says, I cannot do that. They're so high. Of course, I would like to, but still I feel myself, I'm far from them, although I will love them. Mm-hmm. I need some extra mercy that, as we know, will come. Jiva Goswami then presents a sequence to this verse. He will start with the very first word, raga. He says, raga refers to vishaya priti. So vishaya priti means fondness, priti, or attraction for vishaya, sense objects. So raga means vishaya priti. Adaya, again, etc., means that by attaining or not attaining this object of attraction, one respectively experiences joy and sorrow. Again, this material platform. Adaya means etc. So by fondness to sense objects, etc. means something else follows. And something else follows in the form first. Sukha, dukkha. Sukha, dukkha. Duality of happiness and distress. If I can get my sense objects for my sense enjoyment, happiness. If I lose sight of them, distress. Something like that. Then the word house, griha. The house connotes all things material. When the house in itself implies all the sense objects that are in the house, if you will. Moha, Jiva Goswami then says, means lack of discrimination. Moha means bewilderment, as me mohan, lila. So, because of attachment to objects. So he's making this sequence. You get attached to material objects and you get bewildered. Moha. Thus, raga is mentioned first, since all the other items depend on it as a cause. Again, he's on this level analyzing material trajectory, if you will. This is similar in a very brief version of what Krishna says in the Gita. Dhyayato visayapum sam sangate supajayate sangat sanjayate kamakamat krodha vijayate krodha bhavati sammohasam mohasmriti vibrama smriti brahmsabudina sabudinasat pranashate. Now Krishna is describing the whole sequence of falling. Dhyayato by becoming absorbed in the sense object, you develop attachment. But attachment, you want to enjoy that, and eventually comes krodha, because you get frustrated of not being able to enjoy them. You have you get attached in your mind, then you develop the desire to enjoy those things. When you try to enjoy them, kamat krodha vija, you can kam takes to krodha. Krodha means anger. Krodha bhavati sammoha. In anger, sammoha, moha comes. Bewilderment. When you are in anger, you cannot speak with that person. Sammoha smriti vibrama. When you are bewildered, your memory starts to be confused. You lose sight of the consequences of acting in one way or another. You cannot relate how in the past you already did this same thing and how you suffer. You cannot grasp that at that moment. Smriti brahmsabudina, so your intelligence gets confused. You cannot discriminate. Buddhin asat pranashati. And then you fall to the well of material existence. Welcome. So this is a brief mention of that same idea. And in that connection, Brahma concludes, according to Jiva Goswami, O Krishna, you are most worthy of being the ultimate basis of raga. So first he analyzes all this applied to raga in the material sense, the problems of that. Now you are the ultimate basis of raga. Raga means attachment. Because you are the soul of the soul. Krishna is also called Atma. Atma is a name for Krishna with capital A. We are Atma and he's Atma. He's our source. You are an abode of love, he says in Jiva Goswami, devoid of upadis, devoid of false designations. You are an abode of love when there are no limiting adjuncts, no material designations as the one we find in this world. For many of us, the world seems an abode of love, but it's full of upadis. Full of these limiting designations, one after another, in the name of love. Not obtaining its own master, that's a nice way he will put, not obtaining its own master who has these characteristics, raga wanders around and takes away the ingredients of your worship. So he says raga, he makes raga like a person. So he's not able to obtain its own master, the perfect object of raga, who is you. No? Raga is looking to express itself in this world. It's not finding perfect master. So wanders, raga wanders around and takes away the ingredients of your worship. So another is a way of saying people with that raga are not directing raga in your direction. And only in that way raga is a thief. Remember, this verse is saying raga is a thief, stealing the paraphernalia of your worship by, because that material attachment does not allow you to see everything as potential paraphernalia for worshiping Krishna. So material raga is not giving me that vision, then it's a thief. It's stealing those objects that are ideally to be offered in the service of Bhagavan. All this will disappear when these people become yours, these mundane attached people. That is when they obtain raga in the real sense of the term. Then only they will obtain, when they obtain real raga, the second word after raga, the second point is the home. Then only they will obtain a real home. When they have real raga, real attachment, they will have a real home, because you are home. And when you are there, your home will be a real home, because it will be offered to you. And only then they will obtain real moha. That's the last third part. Moha means bewilderment. Because they will be imbued with pure love for you, which creates its own bewilderment, astonishment. So that's how Jiva Goswami makes his point. Only when they have raga, they will have griha, and only then will have moha. In this world, the sequence is different. You are attached to your house, and that creates bewilderment and whole problem. Rajavasi have attachment to Krishna, and their house is a house because it's for him, and that increases their moha, their love and bewilderment. So again, bhakti is very user-friendly. You can dovetail and express all this kama, krodha, mada, moha in the service of Bhagavan. Narottam Das Thakur sings in one of his songs this, how to use calm, desire, to intensely desire to serve Krishna, krodha, as we explained, anger, moha, as we are explaining here, lobha, greed, or path is the path of greed, and so on. But interestingly, he said, but there's one you cannot use, matsarya, envy. There cannot be envy. You cannot use envy. Like want to make the point, how unbecoming that anartha is. So again, it's very user-friendly. No? By attachment, there's a very nice verse of the Bhagavatam that comes to mind from the third canto, 25:20. Prasangama jaram pasham atmana kavayo vidu saiva sarusukritu moksha dhwaram apabritam. So to say that it is well known that attachment is the root cause of all, basically, headaches in this world. The sages have already said that. But saiva sadhusu krito, when that attachment is directed to the sadhus, that same attachment that is the source of all entanglement is expressed in connection to a sadhu, moksha dwaram upabritam. It opens the doors for moksha, for liberation, and more. Again, for us, moksha is something else. So it's one of the classical examples of how, again, the same thing that is a problem cannot be a problem. So the point is, the thing is not the problem, but how do you relate to that? Attachment is not the problem, it's how you relate to that. Material objects are not the problem. The world is not the problem. We have nothing against the world. We have nothing against this body. No. The problem is when we relate to that in a selfish way, in a self-centered way, with exploitative agenda. That's the problem. Our misreading of reality is a problem. It's not that there are no problems, there are no enemies outside. That all converges into this instruction of Srila Siddha Maharaj: try to change your angle of vision. That's the only thing. When you change your angle of vision, there are no more problems. So this verse basically is telling that regarding attachment and moha, bewilderment, house. Sometimes devotees, oh, my house, I'm so attached, and my family, you know, Maharaj, I'm an attached practitioner. I mean, you choose to be that. You are just, by saying all those things, you're just telling how unwilling you are to engage those things in bhakti. How unwilling you are to follow the Brajavasis, to let them inspire you. You're just telling, that's embarrassing, but not embarrassing for the reason you think. Because you are presenting those in victim consciousness, trying to blame someone else. My wife, my kids, the job, the world, my house. Someone has to be guilty for all this. No, and I'm the victim. No. You're a victim of yourself, isn't it? The Jiva Goswami concludes. Let's go to the last part of Jiva Goswami's commentary. Paraphrasing Brahma. When the house is offered to you, it is no longer a prison. When moha becomes part of prem, it is no longer a fault. On this type of criteria, like Srila Prabhupada will say, everything you acquire in your material sojourn is like a zero. No? And you may have a big bank account with millions of zeros, but the value is zero. No matter how many. But you say, no, but I have 3 million zeros. Still, the value is zero. That's a very simple but very genius-like way of, very illustrative. And try to put all the zeros you can in your room. Still, there's zero. The value is not adding. It's the same thing over and over again. So that means all your material so-called possessions and enjoyments separate from the center. Fractured from reality. That's a fractured reality. That's zero. But if you have one, you are the one, and Krishna is the one, all those zeros will show the real value, the real potential. What's the potential of zero? You put a one next to it. So if you feel my whole life have been one zero after another, nirvishesh, and so on, with nihilism, I'm zero. Just you have to get closer. You are zero yourself? You are personified zero? Just get close enough to the one. And then you start to see, oh, now I'm having value. I'm zero, but now I'm 10. I became 10. Oh, but there are other zeros next. 100, 1,000, 1,000,000. Oh. So that's what this verse is speaking. This house is zero. Attachments are zero. Family ties are zero if you don't put the one there. So again, with this, we are not saying hate your family, your mother, is nothing like that. But the point is, if you only love your mom because it's your mom, that's a limited perspective, because that's not the person is, that's not the all in all about that person. If you limit that person to the relationship she has with you, and that's in terms of possessiveness and temporary terms, at the end of the day, that's a problem. And you get attached to that when that's not there, and you are defined by the other person in terms of I, me, mine. When that's not there, where that attachment is not there, I mean, the object of your attachment is not there, and you are defining your own self by material attachment, who you are. That's why people get into crisis when, I don't know, their husband died, because their own identity generally is defined by attachment to those people. So when the object of that attachment disappears, that attachment that was defining them is not finding its object, so who I am, because that person was defining me, and I'm who I am now. They think they are suffering because they left, but actually they are in deep existential crisis because I need someone else to define me, and probably they will get some other person. So you tell me who I am. You define me, thank you so much, I love you. But in the root, there's not much affection there. So anyhow, and Jiva Goswami concludes, the people of Raj, again, when moha becomes part of prem, it's no longer a fault. When house is offered to you, no longer a prison. The people of Raj are the crest jewels of soul surrendered to you, Brahma is saying. How can people like me, Brahma is pointing, who touch the dust from their feet, desiring to attain something, attain a position like them? So again, Brahma is overwhelmed by humility. It's not that he doesn't want to go there, but he's just realizing more and more the glory of the Vrajavasi, the glory of that love, how much he lacks that, how much he wants that, what's the distance in between, and how can I even think of that? I want that, but I feel embarrassed. But of course, that humility is fostering, kindling the fire of longing, and eventually will push him close and close to the goal. So, let's conclude with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. We have a few minutes, eternities on our side yet. So we will go to his Sarartha Darshini commentary. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur begins paraphrasing Krishna, as most of the commentators. Here Krishna may protest. Again, related to the previous verse always. But Brahma, by you glorifying the Vrajavasis, as you did in the previous verse, the sannyasis will object that the inhabitants of Vraj, who are all householders, have fallen into a network of material life bound by attachment to wife, children, and hosts of other persons and things. So by you glorifying the Vrajavasis in terms of their possessions, sannyasis will start to object that thing. Now you are praising people who is happy. You are praising material life, family life and possession. What's that? Sannyasis will protest. And Brahma replies here, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, yes. Like implying, I know sannyasis speak like that. I know those guys. You have to renounce everything and just... And that is true for most materialistic grihasthas. No? They need to be detached. And sometimes sannyasi will speak strongly, not because that's the all-in-all detachment, but because sometimes people are so attached that they need to take a distance from that for a moment to understand where actually you are. So they will speak like that. However, what to speak of the householders of Raj? Even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to these sannyasi critics. No? So, he's saying not even the Vrajavasis, the Ragatmika Vrajavasis are above this detached sannyasi. Even an ordinary devotee of yours who still has not fully accomplished, who lives, is not in Vraj, is already a sadhu. Krishna says that in the Gita, Apichet Sudura Charubhajante Mamananya Bak Sadureva Samantabhya Samyakmya Vyasitohisaha. Even if my devotee still misbehaves on a considerable level, but is sincerely wanting to surrender to me, but somehow because of past some scars, still falling in unbecoming behavior, but sincerely wants to become my devotee, Sadhureva Samantabhya, Krishna says, I consider that person as sadhu already. He's already there, she's already there. No, but still he's already there. Sincerity is invincible. So it's just a matter of time. And they are not yet Vrajavasis anything, but Krishna, they are my sadhu. So they are above sannyasi, jnani, non-sadhu, basically, that's the idea. Brahma continues, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Attachment, hatred, and other material emotions, all of them we know. Sometimes in yoga they are described as the five kleshas, or the five miseries, raga, dvesha, avidya, asmita, and avinivesha. So raga dvesha means attachment to something, and how do you say the opposite to that? Like rejection, repulsion to something, attachment, raga dvesha. No? Avidya, ignorance, asmita, a false sense of self, avinivesha, absorption in that false sense of self. So this, Brahma says here through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, all this raga, adaya, attachment and so on, are great thieves on the material platform. He calls them maha chora. Chora means thief. Maha means big, great. So they are not ordinary thieves. An ordinary thief can come with a gun and tell you, give me all the money, and we will tell him, we don't have any here, so better you go to a better place. Give me. They can take everything externally, but they cannot take way beyond that. But these ones, they will steal your buddhi. As we quote the Bhagavad Gita, buddhi nasa pranashati, you lose your intelligence. These attachments and these enemies, if you want to call it, they will steal your inner organ of discrimination. Those are the big thieves. And therefore, they will steal the great treasure of your potential as a soul. You are a soul, such is an eternal, permanent, and you have the potential to experience highest bliss and love. But if you give yourself in the direction of material attachment, all the things will steal from you the potential to experience all that you can be. Oh Krishna, Brahma prays here. As long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position, this unfortunate position that they are being stolen from constantly. However, of course, always good news at the end, when they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti, raga, and aversion, dvesh, to things obstructing bhakti. Anukulyas sankalpa pratikulyas vartana. And then they repose all their love in you. You become their new object of all these tendencies that were already from before. In this way, the thieves of material attraction, hatred and love become sanctified by becoming fixed in you. And then help the devotee by giving him spiritual bliss, knowledge and a host of other advantages. So all the things, whatever tendency you have at present now, it just have to be sanctified. You don't need to eliminate anything. Just sanctify that, which means repose that tendency in its perfect object. If it's giving you a headache till now, that means the object is not the perfect one. Just recalibrate where you are investing all the things. And if you did properly, so many hosts of blessings will come. A few paragraphs and we can conclude here. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur continues. All this paraphrasing Brahma. In that way, the same home, which was formerly a prison cell created by favorable and unfavorable karmic reactions, the same home, which was a prison cell yesterday, becomes for your devotee a place filled with service to you by hearing and chanting your glories and a host of other activities meant to please you and become an ashram. As we say, Grihastha ashram, Sannyasi ashram, Brahmachari ashram is a shelter, means. So your home is no longer a prison, from prison to shelter. The house is the same, externally, so it's the same breed, same even color, we have not painted, same furniture, but different spirit of inhabiting the place. So that makes the difference. Prison, shelter. Again, it's not about the house, it's about you. You are living in the prison or you are living, taking shelter according to how you choose to relate with reality. So if you do the things properly, in the context of bhakti, your house becomes a mandir, the house of Bhagavan. It's Dauji Gopal's house, and everything belongs to him. Everything is for his service. So whatever is in the house becomes like anubhavs, like ways of expressing your love for Krishna. The furniture, the food, the inhabitants, the visitors, everything converges into this newly discovered center, if you will. These activities that you can perform in your house with Krishna in the center carry one to your eternal abode. Vishwanath says, so Brahma says to Vishwanath Chakravarti, so you don't even need to leave your house to enter Golok Vrindavan, applying this idea. These activities at home, Krishna's in the center, all that you are doing this is getting you closer and closer to the ultimate goal. How can householders like these be compared to ordinary sannyasis? Of course, here ordinary sannyasis means like jnanis, because you can be, of course, if you are a bhakta, a real bhakta, no? And you are sannyasi, no problem. You may not have a home to do the things, but you are a bhakta. The main thing here is you are a bhakta, there is bhakti. If you are a bhakti, you can be whether grihe tako, vane tako, sadahari, boli tako, bhaktina tako. I don't care you are sannyasi, grihastha, as long as javat Krishna jati nati jana, as long as you are devoted to Krishna. Vishwanath Chakravarti concludes saying, therefore, devotee householders who live outside of Raj, so with this he's going again, not to Brajavasis and Ragatmikas, but any other devotee who is a householder outside of Raj, they are thousands of times more advanced than such sannyasis who may criticize. Oh, you're still in the house, you're attached. But actually they are using everything from Krishna's service. The residents of Raj are greater still because of their love, of course. Although you are the Purna Brahma, the absolute truth, complete absolute, you show yourself as dependent upon this premika bhakta, upon these loving devotees of Raj, by taking the form of their son, friend, or lover, becoming their submissive servant. And that's how Brahma concludes through Vishwanatha Chakravarti's prayer. No? The love they have is such that you, who are the complete absolute, are taking all these different forms, as we spoke these days. You take shape according to the love of their devotees to satisfy how they want to serve you. They have a certain desire, as we spoke the other day regarding Kishore's question, what's first? No? And the devotees have some desire, and Krishna has to appear in a form to correspond with that, as Guru Maharaj spoke in Janmashtami. No? His form is the ultimate because it corresponds with the ultimate Vatsalya of Nanda Maharaj, and so on. So you appear, you become a servant to them, serving them by appearing in that form and just living to reciprocate with them. This is the love of the Vrajavasi. Brahma is going to that verse again. How is the fortune of these people that you, although you are the Supreme Absolute Truth, you become their friend. Because they want to love you as their friend. So still you are the Absolute, but became their friend because they want that. And you serve them. That's your identity. In the Bhagavatam famous section, Vishnu in Vaikuntha is saying, Aham Bhakta Bharati no Hyasya Tantri Vadya Sadhubir Grashta Hridayo Bhaktari Bhakta Jana Priya. I'm the servant of my devotees. Aham Bhakta Bharati no, I'm dependent on them. I actually don't have any type of independence. Asya Tantra. I'm not independent. I'm known as Swatantra. I'm known famously as independent. I'm not independent, to be honest. Vishnu is saying. So it seems like Krishna is speaking this verse, but actually that's Vishnu by Kuntha. So it's such a statement. He said, what to speak of my devotees? I'm dependent of the devotees of my devotees. I have no independence from those. So if Vishnu by Kuntha says that, what to speak of Krishna Vrindavan? How he will express those same words? There are many ways to say that, no? I was saying that in Switzerland, and Krishna Chant wrote something. Okay, but if Vishnu say that in Vaikuntha, then what Krishna say? Which is the verse in the Bhagavatam in which Krishna is saying that same thing? And we quoted Naparayaham Nirabhadya Sanjayam. Then I was thinking more and think there's another verse in which Krishna is saying, Anubrajamyaham Nityam Pujayetan Girenubi Nirapeksham Muninsham Tam Nirbhayam Samadarshan. He's glorifying his devotees, and that, of course, he ultimately converges in Braj, and he says, Anubrajami aham nityam, I perpetually follow in the footsteps, pujayeti angri rayenubihi, and I worship their feet, and I hope to be bathed by the dust of their feet. That's a more Krishna-like version of the same verse. No? To what degree Krishna is like becoming a servant, a devotee of his devotees. So Brahma again is realizing all this. This is the God I'm worshipping. And that's how I want to worship him, to a point that his godhood totally disappears, like in Braj. So anyhow, let's conclude here. And tomorrow, in our next class, next verse, Brahma will conclude not the whole section of the Brahma Stuti, but a particular series of prayers, because inside the main Stuti, there are different sections of prayers. So tomorrow he will conclude a particular section of prayers in which Brahma, as we can see, he's pointing to the Vrajavasis and praising the Vrajavasis. And after that verse, from verse 38 on, Brahma will reach his more like concluding remarks, like wrapping up the whole stuti and making his closing presentation. But tomorrow he will make one more verse in the glorification of the Vrajavasis, mentioning how the love of the Vrajavasis make Bhagavan come to earth. We spoke about that on Janmashtami in one level. And may come to here and behave like a human, engage in Nara Lila, in order, again, to reciprocate with how the Vrajavasis desire to love him. So he comes for them as a puppet of him and acts as they want him to be. So that point will be made tomorrow by Brahma. So we'll conclude here, but if there are any questions, we have a few minutes. If anyone has any question, Kishore.
I'm trying to think exactly how to word it, but I guess I'm reflecting a little on like the distinction between perspective.
Again, sorry, last part I didn't hear.
I'm reflecting a little bit on the distinction between like perspective, and like angle of vision, and like activities. And I can really see this verse applying to like wholly to like perspective, but when it applies to like activities, I see like some, I don't know, it's hard for me to like fully apply it in the sense of like, it's been my experience that I've, in my own life and seeing life of others, that the more one engages in Arup Siddha Bhakti or Sangha Siddha Bhakti at the cost of Sarup Siddha Bhakti, with, you know, completely trying to apply that, I'd seen practices dwindle or inspiration fade. And, so it seems like, to do that, one would have to be like, it's almost like it's a lot higher qualification. I'm trying to think exactly how to put it. Like the emphasis, the strong emphasis of the Bhagavatam and so forth, of being able to, with the proper perspective, to offer all of that to Krishna and be a vehicle for toward our goal of praying. I don't know, I haven't always seen it play out that way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's been even in devotees that I consider very, very advanced.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen when there hasn't been enough space and time, because we have such a limited amount of time, enough time given to Sarup Siddha Bhakti, that it becomes harder and harder to have those things directed
mm-hmm.
towards Krishna.
Yeah, I get the point. I mean, I think I get the point. And we have made that point many times, like, for example, speaking in the terms you express yourself, we have Arup Siddha Bhakti, Sangha Siddha Bhakti on one side and Swarup Siddha Bhakti on another, if you will. And of course, you will be able to engage in Sangha Siddha Bhakti, if you will, to connect everything, non-devotional activities, and make them bhakti. You will be able to establish that link as much as you are engaging in Swarup Siddha Bhakti. Again, of course, we are not promoting here just like connect everything with Krishna and that's it. Yes, but how? No, and for that you need to to purify your own sense of seeing yourself and seeing everything around you. And for that you need grace, and for that you need sadhana. And Swarup Siddha Bhakti, of course, is central to all that, which means all these inherently devotional activities like kirtan and Bhagavad Shravan, Sadhu Sangha, and so on. So yeah, we need to spend some considerable amount of time investing ourselves in that direction and trying to balance all our other engagements, especially in our stage. Again, if you go to Golok Vrindavan, they are not generally like chanting japa and going to Mangala Arati in the way a sadhaka is doing that. No? Mm-hmm. Krishna is chanting japa in Nandara, but the chant japa of supposedly of the names of Narayan, Yashoda asks him, please chant, do your daily meditation. But he's chanting the name of Radha only, no? Mm-hmm. And praying for her to appear, and that's the moment when she's coming to cook for him in the morning. So, the fruit of my mantra has been resolved. The object of my Ishtadev, Darshan of my Ishtadev, no? He's looking, mm-hmm. peeking at her in the window. And they are worshipping Narayan in the altar, but for the sake of Krishna. So yeah, for us as sadhakas, it's important. It's easier said than done, of course. Just engage everything, your house, your wife, your kids, yourself, and your money, for the pleasure of Krishna. Again, it's easier said than done. How to actually end in doing that, again, yes, it's a change of perspective. And change of perspective is not just playing and pressing a button, but pouring new samskaras, as we're speaking, because perspective means, what does it mean? I have a perspective of life, a way of looking at things. It's who I am till now because of samskaras received that make me think things, see things with me in the center. So I need to replace that. So for that, I need to, as Guru Maharaj will say, you have the bottle of ink, pour milk on that. Prabhupada say that. Keep pouring milk. But don't pour ink again, also, because that can happen sometimes. Yeah, I keep pouring milk, but in between you put some drops of ink. Yet still you go, and so the more you do that, the more you won't find the total result, and the more you won't be able to fully engage that. And yeah, to fully engage that, that's not a cheap thing. No, that's not an easy thing. That's not something I'm just speaking here, and I want to see you all of us doing that in this weekend or something. You know, it's like, I mean, when you are able to do that fully, it means basically you are there. No, you are a Vrajavasi yourself. And you will be naturally, swiftly transported in that direction. So it's, but gradually we have to do that, understanding, yeah, the need for Swarup Siddha Bhakti to nourish our perspective while engaging in whatever daily actions. And of course, while engaging in daily actions externally, trying to make some conscious effort internally to direct those actions into the proper focus. At least in certain states, there has to be some personal will invested in that direction. In some other stages, as it is mentioned, I don't know, when Mahaprabhu was in Jagannath Puri in Gambira, he will go to have darshan in the morning, do these morning duties and receive prasad, but he will conduct himself in those activities naturally, but internally he was totally absorbed always in his particular bhava, in his particular inner world. No? So he didn't need to, okay, now I'm having a shower, but I'll try to think, I'm actually taking care of my sadhaka day in the service of my guru. He didn't need not anything of that. What time is it now? I'm taking the shower. Okay, this corresponds with the Purvan Lila in Nityanavdi. So now Mahaprabhu is, okay. I mean, I'm not saying that's bad. You can try to direct your mind like consciously by force, if you will, in some direction. But at some point, that's just like, you cannot even avoid that. As we say, sometimes the bodhis are engaging in devotional activities, even in Swarup Siddha Bhakti externally, but your mind is not in Swarup Siddha Bhakti internally. You can be chanting japa externally, but internally you are in any form of bhakti whatsoever. And very advanced devotees are externally engaging in something so-called ordinary, but they're internally always in Swarup Siddha Bhakti and absorbed in remembrance and glorification. So of course there is a gap to walk in that connection, and everyone has to see where they are and take the necessary measures for that. No? And that requires determination and even organization, especially in the beginning stages where you know you don't have too much control over some impulses, I will say. Like we were speaking again, sorry to go to that topic again, on social media. Most people do not have control over those things. They think, I just take this and use it. But sometimes you need to determine yourself. I will use it only in this time, only in this day, only till this point. If you don't have that, you may get carried away by that or so many other things. You cannot just expect to have full spontaneity and control over the situation. So in certain stage of sadhana, if you are humble and sincere, you will recognize, yeah, I have to watch out this particular tendency that I know I'm not fully controlling. So I have to make a necessary determination and organization how to deal with that activity or dynamics of my daily life so I don't get really carried away by that. So that's part of our sincerity and integrity, recognizing those things in the stage we may be. And when that's no longer there, great, yeah, but... We have to explore those sections, yeah. Okay, something else? Just one question here by Sarah Grahi from Finland. So it says like this. Is Brahma doing the same mistake of forgetting the divinity of Krishna and stealing the cover boys in every Chatur Yuga? If so, how is that he's doing it 1,000 times in one of his days? I wonder if it will be possible to answer this without pressing the Lila button. It's Lila, Saragrahi. It's just Lila. I have the Lila button, I have the Chintya button. You want the Chintya one? I have many buttons here. So yeah, somehow this question came throughout the series from different people in the audience. Not exactly your same question, but from another place. But the question was basically... The main question, but is connected to this, is, okay, if Brahma after this Leela experienced what he experienced and his desire to enter Sakya Bhava, and we as Gaudiyas consider he was born on Haridas Thakur, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, and it's described by Kavi Karna Puringor Ganadesh Deepika, and as Haridas Thakur, he fully accomplished himself into his ideal, then what happened with Brahma? No? With that Brahma, let's begin that particular individual who is not Krishna himself, it's an jiva acting as Brahma. So we could say two things, no, regarding that. We already spoke about that. One thing will be, because the point is, still his life is going on. Brahma's Haridas Thakur. Okay, Brahma came as Haridas Thakur. Who is Brahma when Brahma is Haridas Thakur? And if Brahma got, you follow my point, got totally redeemed as Haridas Thakur, still the day of Brahma, the life of Brahma is continuing. So where is Brahma? Now, there no Brahma, and that's why the world is as chaotic as it is. So we could say, I mean, this is not addressed in detail that I know in Shastra, but the way we can try to apply Shastra Yukti in this connection is we could say two things. One is, which is not the option that I will have bigger tendency to, is you could say, no, Brahma still remains as Brahma till the end of his life, but in a totally enlightened way after being Haridas Thakur, and after he ends his life, he attains his ultimate goal. That's one thing, one idea. I personally do not subscribe that much to that one. And the second one could be, because we hear that sometimes when there's nobody as qualified, a jiva qualified to be Brahma, Bhagavan takes that post. In this case, we could say, when someone in the post of Brahma becomes too qualified to remain as Brahma and gets redeemed, Bhagavan has to go and take that post. I subscribe more with that idea. So we could say that Brahma becomes enlightened and fully redeemed as Haridas Thakur, and then Bhagavan takes the pose of Brahma till the end of the Brahma's life, because there is no longer Brahma there. You know, that's another way of putting that. So I hope that didn't sound like that as I pressed the lila button by saying that. Sorry?
Wouldn't that be happening over and over again? Yeah,
I'm going there. Yeah, that was the first consideration. So the question of Saragrahi, which of course I've not fully replied, is if this is happening every single Chaturyugan over and over again. Well, that's not mentioned anywhere that I know in Shastra as well. So that's not necessarily the case that it has to happen. And of course, on top of that, if we agree that that Bhagavan is entering the pose of Brahma, and if that will happen again, that will be Bhagavan being Bimohan as Brahma. And that doesn't make too much sense, although everything is possible by the arrangement of Yoga Maya. I'm sorry that I'm ending pressing the lila button maybe again somehow, if that's the case. But yeah, these are not things that have been, like, again, absolutely definitively addressed in detail that I know, at least. Of course, if anyone else wants to add something, I will appreciate. But so that's what we can say about that. We have enough to learn from that, this Brahma and him and as Haridas Thakur, I will say as to. I mean, I am okay with the question, but yeah, we have to be careful sometimes about wondering too much about what happening next, about next Brahmas, and this, we have so much to draw from this Brahma and him and Haridas Thakur, and no time to lose for other Brahmas, if you will, with all respect. But yeah, that will be some idea in that connection. Kishore.
One past time I thought of that may have some connection to Sakirasva Haridas Thakur was the when Mahaprabhu asked him and Srivas to go find Nityananda. Srivas obviously has connection to Mother Manga.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I don't know, it's kind of a reach, but, you know, selecting two to go find Baba.
Yeah, I mean, we could make some connection, but I wouldn't take that as, like, I mean, I appreciate your logic, but I wouldn't try to make a case out of that. But we can add that to hope maybe a list of other things that, because also you can make the point that, okay, he was selected, but he didn't find Nityananda. Mm-hmm. Oh, so the anti-party will say that. No, you can make the case, okay, if he was such an intimate, he was selected, he will know where he is, and he didn't find it. Mm-hmm. So it was Mahaprabhu who had to go on to Nandanacharya Bhavan and find Nityananda there. But Haridas was not able to do it. I mean, I don't want to just defeat your point, just we are thinking together. Let's continue exploring Haridas Thakur's lilas, describing the different biographies of Mahaprabhu. Maybe some further hints can be there. Shri Haridas Thakur ki jai, Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Dauji Gopal ki jai, Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Brahma Stuti ki jai, Shri Ekadasi ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premananda Haribo.